when we talk about the literary influence of the Bible, some people are going to say, well, sure, Bible influenced things way back when, maybe Shakespeare and John Milton and people like that, but it's far more widespread as far as its influence than just simply a couple or three or four of the main writers. The Bible is the major source and influence for Western literature, and I'll underline that, the major source and influence for Western literature since the Middle Ages. Northrop Frye, who is a well-known critic, said the Bible is the major informing influence on literary symbolism. He says, once our view of the Bible comes into proper focus, a great mass of literary symbols from the dream of the rood to little Gidding begins to take on meaning. So another critic said the Bible becomes one with the Western tradition because it is its greatest source. Good place to start, I suppose, is something that C.S. Lewis once said. He wrote something called The Literary Impact of the Authorized Version. Of course, when he says authorized version, he's talking about the King James Bible. He said there's a distinction between the Bible as a literary source and a literary influence. He says a source gives us things to write about, an influence prompts us to write in a certain way. And so I'm going to say that the Bible is an influence. It prompted people to write in a certain way, not just things to talk about. So let's look at it. What's one thing the Bible has done for other authors? It's certainly been a source of titles for their works. Think about Faulkner, Go Down Moses, or Absalom, Absalom. How about Steinbeck, East of Eden? Boy, how's that? Just ties right in, doesn't it? The Fall by Camus, The Sun Also Rises, Hemingway, from the story in Ecclesiastes. All you have to see is that title. If you know anything about Ecclesiastes, vanity, vanity. Everything is vanity. It certainly is in that story. It's a perfect rendition of Ecclesiastes. Go Tell It on the Mountain, James Baldwin. The Power and the Glory, Graham Greene. How about poets? Sure. Edward Arlington Robinson said, had titles like The Valley of the Shadow, Peace on Earth, Many Are Called, and If the Lord Would Make Windows in Heaven. Okay, let's go beyond that. So titles, yes, obviously. I like science fiction, and there was one taken from first part of Ecclesiastes, I believe it was, and I've seen others that are just all over the place from the Bible. But beyond titles, a lot of authors have used the Bible for names of fictional characters. How about Scarlet Letter? Maybe we don't think about it, but the word Hester, the main character Hester, is a variant of Esther, and she has an illegitimate child, Pearl. What's that? Well, we think about the Pearl of Great Price. Probably the most important way, though, the Bible has served as a source for literature is the subject matter. Everything from plays to stories to poems. So that's what we want to look at, as well as other things. Often we get interpretations of biblical material. Let me read you a famous, well, I don't know how famous it is. William Childress wrote a poem called The Dreamer. He spent his childhood hours in a den of rushes, watching the gray rain brail the surface of the river. Concealed from the outside world, nestled within, he was safe from parents, God, and eyes that looked upon him accusingly as though to say, even at your age, you could do better. His camouflage was scant, but it served, and at evening, when fireflies burned holes into heaven, he took the path homeward in the dark, a small Noah leaving his safe ark. Now, it's called The Dreamer, and it's actually the story of Moses, but do you hear some connections there, like the dreamer of Joseph, the Joseph story? We get a reaction when we hear the name Noah in there. I think about Daniel, when I read that about a den, Daniel in the den. So do you hear, we're hearing echoes of biblical material in there. In fact, I like to take something in my class. I take a book of poetry called Chapters into Verse. These are reactions of famous and not so famous poets who have dealt with a biblical story and turned it into a poem. And so it's Chapters into Verse. You might enjoy it and take a look at it sometime. So more than just recreating a biblical event or character, often we get an interpretation of the biblical material as well. Well, what else do the writers do? They like to take biblical characters and stories and put them in the writer's own world. There's a play by Wolf Mankiewicz called It Should Happen to a Dog. Well, what has he done? He's taken Jonah's life and placed that in a modern setting. So Jonah becomes a traveling salesman complaining about his situation in life. Robert Frost put the biblical prophet Jonah also in his play, A Mask of Mercy. Milton, way back when, had a drama, Samson Agonistes. He chose the biblical story to allow him for his own literary purpose to use those characters. Archibald MacLeish took the story of Job, and he wrote a play called J.B., And he brought his characters in the story of a calamity from the Old Testament, but it's a little different. He takes the biblical story in which Job, he has that moment toward the end of Job where he encounters God and ends up shutting up, saying, your ways are not my ways, and I should just be quiet. Well, in MacLeish's play, it's a little different. At the end, the insight is the affirmation of human love between two characters. So kind of a lower vision there than the original Old Testament story. Something that the Bible uses a lot of that authors use from the Bible that has real power is something called an allusion. Allusion is a literary reference. And what's so powerful about these allusions, a writer can just mention a name, a place, a phrase, and it will suggest all sorts of things. So if I say something like, I met my Waterloo the other day, that's a historical allusion, and just by the fact, if people know anything about the story of Napoleon and what happened to him, especially at the Battle of Waterloo, you can understand what I'm referencing. What if I say, I come dragging in the house at the end of a long day, and I say, now I know how Custer felt. Do you see how it's a shorthand, isn't it? Without having to go into the whole story of George Armstrong Custer, I just make that comment, and it's that short punchiness that makes the listener or the reader have to search through the memories and go, oh, and then all these references take on a wider, richer meaning because of that. So writers often will refer directly to the Bible in some way to connect to what they want to say. John Donne, let me give you a quick example here. He starts one of his sonnets this way. At the round earth's imagined corners, blow your trumpets, angels. What's he talking about? Well, Revelation 7:1 says there are four angels standing in the four corners of the earth. So this must be a huge event that he's talking about. How about John Milton? He has a sonnet on his blindness, and he talks in that poem with this phrase, that one talent which is death to hide. So what's that one talent? Well, remember one of Christ's parables dealt with talents. And so we need to know that story and to think back on that. Sometimes allusions will appear in titles or names of the characters. Let's take Great Expectations by Dickens. The main character is, the criminal, who's the benefactor, and that's called Abel Magwitch. So Abel, right, he's the one killed in the Bible. And so Dickens' character is portrayed as a victim who is, in a sense, killed by a bad judicial system. So you can see the similarities, the resonance there. How about William Faulkner? He writes a novel about the death of a person's dreams and entire Southern culture. His book is called Absalom, Absalom. And so he, of course, is referencing David's sorrowful lament over the death of his son in the Old Testament story. And so it makes his story seem that much more powerful. Leo Tolstoy had a book, short novel, called Death of Ivan Illich. By the way, that's a terrific story. It doesn't take you that long to read. I would suggest, if you can, pick that up and take a look. It is so fresh and so modern, dealing with a man who's too busy frittering his way through life to realize some important issues until he faces death himself. And if you read that story toward the end, Ivan's turnabout, his change, comes after 3 days of suffering. Does that sound familiar? 3 days. And there's actually an echo of 1 Corinthians in there about death, about losing a fear of death. And then just right at the end, somebody says, it is finished. That should remind us of Christ's comment from the cross. How about William Butler Yeats? He had this poem called The Second Coming. Now, that is pretty ironic and pretty sad. You know, the second coming Christians talk about is Jesus to set things right. Wow, if you read Yeats' poem, though, the second coming is the collapse of civilization and something terrible, some slouching beast is coming, not Jesus to set things right again. Archetypes, biblical allusions often use archetypes. One way the Bible has influenced storytellers is the development of characters and plot. Did you know, for example, Thomas Hardy? He took the mayor of Casterbridge, which is looking at observations of life in rural England, but as he put this story together about generational conflict where a younger man takes over from an older man, does that sound familiar in the Old Testament? A story of an older man who was king, that would be Saul, and a younger man comes along, David, and undermines the authority of the older. William Wordsworth begins a sonnet, "The world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers." He's echoing the New Testament there about the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches that choke the word. That's in Matthew. In 1 John it says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world." Romans 12:2, "Don't be conformed to this world." So you can hear the parallel passage going on there. How about William Blake? A lot of imagery. He says, "Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear, O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire." That's Isaiah. Isaiah 66, verses 15 and 16. Isaiah has this vision that the Lord will come with fire to render his rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire and by his sword will the Lord plead with all flesh. Jeremiah talks about coming with clouds, and so we get clouds also in the William Blake poem. So there's so much that we could say here, just obviously so much, and there's no way I can do it all. Basically, you need to go through the Bible, get saturated with these characters, with these places, with these events, and as you read, it'll open up such a new world for you. As I said before, I think I may have used this example in the past. You start in on Moby Dick. Now, good luck if you read Moby Dick. But anyway, you start in the first two words, first three words, "Call me Ishmael." Now, if you don't have any Bible background, you don't recognize the allusion. But of course, if you do recognize it, you say, "Oh, Ishmael was a wanderer. Ishmael was a cast-off. Ishmael was the unwanted." And so you begin to put together that picture, even though just the word popped into the novel, but Melville, as well as so many authors, they have expected the reader. They have hoped that the reader has a background and can bring to this work something from the Bible. T.S. Eliot, Gift of the Magi. Journey of the Magi, sorry. Well, there's a Gift of the Magi. I'm thinking of O. Henry's story. But we get the word Magi in there more than once. So, again and again, the background of the Bible is going to make you a better reader, make you appreciate what you read even more. Television shows, movies, books you read, magazine articles. We are drenched, whether people believe it or not, we're drenched in biblical references. So, I hope you have a chance, as I've said more than once, I hope you have a chance to spend some time, go through the Bible, at least the highlights, the main stories, the main poems. If you'd like, I'd be glad to send you a list. If you email me, I'll send you a list of some of the most important chapters of the Bible. And when you're done, you'll have gone through about a fourth of the Bible. And you'll have an excellent background as you tackle all forms of literature.